will start with the important role of land reforms. Land reforms are of great significance for the country in more than one way. These contribute a lot to growth of the economy. Equally importantly, these reforms render social justice to the poor farmers. The first important role is land reforms promotes growth. The principal way by which the land reforms raises agricultural production is by offering the much needed incentives to the actual tillers of the soil. These incentives arise from the fact that these reforms aim at removing the impediments in their efforts at doing the most for agriculture. The land reforms also seek improvements in their conditions to work and ensure for them reasonable sized units for farming. Induced by these favorable circumstances, the farmers put in more hard work, make more investments and take more care for the land and its produce. These incentives are of key importance in India's agrarian system, where most of the farmers, nearly 3/4 of the farm holders, work under the most trying conditions. Quite a large number among them are tenants cultivating land under repressive contracts in respect of the security of their tenure, the rents they are made to pay to the landlords, and their working conditions. The result is that the cultivators do not have any incentive to make a proper use of agricultural resources. Those who work on their own land are no better off. They farm very small pieces of land. In most of the cases, they are further handicapped because their lands are scattered over several places, making farming a totally unviable proposition. Changing this disincentive-ridden agrarian system through improvements in the conditions of tenants as also in the size of the farming units, which the land reforms aim at, will spur the farmers to put forth their best for agriculture. It may be added that these incentives associated, as these are with organizational changes, involve no monetary cost. Unlike the incentives through subsidies or tax concessions, etc., which are burdensome, these reforms are a costless source of agricultural growth. This is of particular importance at present when the country is faced with the problem of finding investment resources for such vital spheres as infrastructure and social sectors. The second important role is land reforms render social justice. Besides contributing to the growth, the land reforms are an eminently suitable means of doing justice to the small farmers. These reforms seek the removal of such exploitative features of the agrarian system as rack renting, insecurity of tenure, prevalence of inhuman practices like vagar, etc. in the case of farmers working as tenants. Instead, the land reforms provide for fair rent, secure tenure, human conditions of work, etc. These reforms also ensure equality of tenural status to all the tenants and expand opportunities for them in regard to the land they get on lease or rent and the produce they wish to raise. Through redistribution of land by transferring some land from those with large lands to the landless or who own very small pieces of land, the policy of land reforms tends to reduce gross inequalities of productive assets which mark the rural scene. Such transfers provide to the land poor farmers the most productive assets which raise their income and thereby further narrow the gap between the big landlords and the small landlords. Again, the consolidation of widely dispersed tiny farming units through exchange of land among the small landowners helps the farmers to raise the efficiency of agricultural operations and through that their incomes. This further reduces the disparities in the rural areas. It may also be added that all these components of land reforms benefit the vast sections of the rural population through reduction in the incidence of poverty among them. We have covered the two important roles of land reforms. The first one was land reforms promote growth, and the second one is land reforms render social justice. Now we will cover provisions and progress. The thrust of land reforms has been in respect of three aspects of the agrarian system. These are land tenurial system, redistribution of land, and consolidation of scattered holdings. We discuss the main elements of reforms in each of these aspects and the progress made so far. The first provision or the progress is the land tenurial system. The reforms in the tenancy system has been on the two fronts. One concerned the zamindari system set up by the British government, which the land reforms sought to abolish. With its abolition, the intermediaries or zamindars who collected land revenues for the government and also extracted unduly high rents from the cultivators were eliminated. As a result, the cultivators numbering more than 20 million came into direct contact with the state. This system was in essence exploitative, as it involved the existence of an intermediary class between the cultivator and the government, who had no interest in agriculture except to suck as much as possible from the actual tillers of the soil. Some of these tenures were of great antiquity also, and existed for exploitation since very long in the past. With its abolition, India may be said to have passed into the modern agrarian system. 2. The reforms concern the betterment of the conditions of tenants who work on lands owned by others. Various steps have been taken to improve their lot. These consist of fixation of rents as also security of tenure through protection against track renting and eviction. Ownership rights have also been conferred in many cases over lands cultivated by them as tenants after the fulfillment of certain conditions, such as payment of price for land, etc. Steps have also been taken to prevent the eviction of tenants living in homesteads or huts or some improvised shelters built on small pieces of land adjacent to the farmland of landlords under whom they work. In many cases, they have been given the ownership rights over these homesteads. The second provision is redistribution of land. The reforms provided for the ceiling or the maximum land that a family can own, with the surpluses over the ceiling to be transferred to the landless or small cultivators. The ceiling has of course varied according to the quality and crops of land. Less for irrigated land, more for dry areas, less for grain crops, more for orchards, etc. By now, all the states have enacted laws in this regard. Land rendered surplus over the ceiling is taken over by the state. The same is then distributed among the poor farmers, such as those belonging to scheduled caste and scheduled tribes, etc. So far, 44 lakh acres of land has been distributed. Another 13 lakh acres available under the Bhudan movement of Acharya Vinoba Bhave have been distributed. Besides, large tracts of waste lands have also been handed over to the afflict poor farmers. The third point is consolidation of holdings. This measure of reforms aims at providing compact pieces to farmers whose own lands are not only very small in size but are also scattered over different areas. These small and scattered pieces are a big handicap in efficient cultivation, as these involve wastage of resources and looking after so many pieces often located at long distances, as also underutilization of land and other factors like labor in each plot. Measures in the form of laws for the consolidation of these holdings have been undertaken in most of the states. These measures permit exchange of plots among different owners so that each owner can have continuous or compact piece. Largely, such exchanges are allowed on a voluntary basis. However, compulsory consolidation is also provided in certain circumstances. It has been estimated that about 52 million hectares of land has so far been consolidated. Slow progress. As described above, land reforms have made some headway in improving the agrarian system. But the progress, considering the fact that these reforms have been under implementation for the last 50 years or so, is indeed very tardy. Except for the zamindari system, which ended in the middle of the 1950s, improvements in the other components of the land reform have been far from satisfactory. Even in the case of the abolition of the zamindari system, things have not turned out to be in line with the objectives of the land reforms. With no provision having been made to ensure that the cultivator alone would own the land, there has emerged a class of absentee landlords who lease out land on rent for cultivation. Further, since zamindars could also become owners, last many cultivators have been ejected from the land. In the case of tenancy reforms too, some serious shortcomings have emerged. Rents have, for example, been fixed in large many cases, but the snag is that these have not been reduced in all the cases. There is again no doubt some improvement in respect of security of tenure or safeguard against ejection of tenants from the land. But in quite many cases, the situation has not much changed. In fact, it has become worse. Since tenancy laws allowed resumption of cultivation by the owners, many tenants have been ejected. In several cases, large-scale ejectments have taken place through the device of voluntary surrenders, that is, fictitious surrenders wherein tenants, cultivators, on their own accord, give up their rights on land, which in reality is largely under fear of ejectment. The provisions in laws to allow cultivators to become owners have neither been easy to understand nor easily implementable. The many officials, as also their relatives who own land, did not implement tenancy laws or obstructed their application fully. The performance in respect of redistribution of land is equally unsatisfactory. The land distributed at 4.4 million acres is far less than the land declared surplus at 7.6 million acres. Even that declared surplus has not been fully acquired, with the acquired land at 5.9 million acres. It is also pointed out that the land declared surplus is far less than the estimated surplus by some experts in the field. For example, the committee of experts in 1970 put the surplus at 40 million acres. Mahalana Boys 1955 earlier estimated the surplus at 60 million acres. As for the third component of land reforms, namely consolidation of scattered holdings is concerned, the implementation has so far been completed in only a very few states. Several states have not as yet enacted legislation in this regard. Now we will look out the causes of slow progress. As discussed above, while the land reforms have been on course, the progress has been unsatisfactory. The main reasons for this poor performance arise under defective laws. The legislative enactments which embody the aims of land reforms suffer from some serious shortcomings. In the first place, the contents of laws by and large contradict the underlying thrust of land reforms, namely land to the tiller of the soil. For example, while the intermediaries of the zamindari system have been eliminated, it has not been made obligatory that land should belong only to those who cultivate. As a result, the new zamindars, in essence absentee landlords, have emerged, giving rise to rack renting of the weak tenant cultivator. Again, in the case of ceiling laws, it is not provided that only those people would be allowed to retain land who cultivate themselves. As a result, a serious consequence has been that much of the land has gone to non-agriculturists who have the least interest in cultivation. Secondly, the relevant laws contain so many exemptions and allow so large a flexibility to the executive that the aim of putting the entire agricultural land within the orbit of land reform has been defeated. No doubt, the list of exemptions got shortened with the passage of time, but many exemptions still remain. For example, certain types of trusts can still get land cultivated through tenants. Again, in case of ceiling laws, the range within which the upper limit can be fixed is wide enough to allow for a limit which does not leave enough of surplus land for distribution. Yet again, in the case of consolidation laws, some states have permitted consolidation to be done on a voluntary basis. This virtually amounts to no action. Thirdly, the wording of land laws in quite many cases is such as could be interpreted
to suit anybody or any occasion. It is for this reason that there have been innumerable litigation cases which have barred or delayed the operation of these laws. It is not that the laws have been flouted, but the escape clauses in them and also the use of legal terminology in several cases have been misused to negate the essentials of land reforms. Inadequate implementation. Another cause of slow progress is that the implementation of land reforms has not been put through fully. Quite a number of states, for example, have not as yet enacted laws in this regard. In some cases, all the aspects of land reforms have not been put into laws. Some states were late in completing legislative measures. There have also been delays in formulating policies and enacting laws. For example, between the first announcement of policy with regard to the ceiling on land ownership and its enactment into laws and its application, so much time had elapsed that a sizable part of land was taken out of the ambit of the new laws by state transfers. Administrative arrangements for the implementation of land reforms too have not been properly made. The administrative personnel in most of the states took these reforms as ordinary government activities. Little care is taken to ensure that the personnel for this purpose is strongly motivated and committed one to the objectives of land reforms, nor is there enough provision for education and training of the personnel who could put through these reforms as changes which are to revolutionize the agrarian setup. Inadequacy of data pertaining to land in respect of ownership, lease, geographical boundaries, etc., has also stood in the way of quick and proper implementation of land reform laws. Most of the data has been outdated. In several cases, it has been grossly inadequate and incomplete. Quite a significant part of the data has been based upon oral evidence, in some cases even unauthenticated, and fictitious entries have been made. In sum, all the data could not be taken as reliable. The third cause for the slow progress is inadequate political support. Much of the reason for the unsatisfactory progress of land reforms, however, lies in the political field. In an agricultural economy like that of India, with the feudal relation still very strong and the ownership or acquisition of land considered as the most important source of prestige and power, partly because of the slow-growing non-agricultural wealth, the need for the political backup for the land reforms was imperative. It was necessary to force the land reforms into the right direction and in the shortest possible time. Long back, the Task Force on Agrarian Relations, that was in 1973, rightly emphasized that no tangible progress could be expected in the field of land reforms without the requisite political will. But unfortunately, the political support has not been adequate to see through these radical changes in the outdated agrarian system which the land reforms promised. The land reforms, despite some progress, continue to remain a declaration of good intentions. This is obvious from the fact that there are still large gaps between the provisions of the policy and legislation on the one hand and that between the laws and their implementation on the other. In the absence of effective political support, the bureaucracy in general remained largely indifferent. The corrupt officers, together with large many landlords, prevented the application of land reforms. They even distorted the laws to suit their interests and those of landlords. All this went against the small farmers. In many cases, they became even worse off than before. With this, we have covered the causes of slow progress. The causes were defective laws, inadequate implementation, and inadequate political support. Now we will look for some suggested remedies. After having discussed the causes of unsatisfactory progress, we now take up the remedial measures which are needed to complete the implementation of land reforms in the shortest possible time. Strengthening legal framework. This is one of the remedies. The first and the foremost task is to put in place the laws with the sole purpose of safeguarding the interests of the actual tillers of the soil. In framing laws, while there should be uniformity in the overall thrust of these laws, there may be variations in respect of details in different states because of differences in regard to some aspects of the agrarian system of the country. To have a legal framework for the entire country, it is necessary as a first step that all those states who have not yet passed laws in this respect should do so without further loss of time. As for the laws themselves, their formulation should be clear enough to leave no scope for conflicting interpretation. Further, keeping in view the experience of the past so many years, there should be no loopholes left unplugged in these laws. Provision should also be made for speedy settlement of disputes if and when these arise. Law should also provide for easy registration of all the transactions connected with land, including the conditions of contracts between the landlords and tenants. The laws should also be flexible enough to let the cultivator opt for better jobs if and when he finds one. This is necessary in view of the present fast-changing scenario of the economy under the new policy of liberalization. The second remedy would be providing appropriate administrative machinery. For effective application of laws, a suitable administrative mechanism is the most essential requisite. It needs an efficient and devoted personnel to put through the laws. The selection procedure and also training of such a personnel have to be on a footing different from that for other civil services. The rules and the procedures for the conduct of administration in this regard must be simple and free of bureaucratic red tape. The administrative setup must also ensure the updating of land records besides compiling and preserving other data regarding the use of land, etc. Equally importantly, the administration should provide for the monitoring of the progress made in regard to the implementation of land reforms. Measures should also be available to the administration to speedily correct things if they go wrong. Ideally, it would be good to have a separate department in every state for dealing with all the matters relating to the implementation of land reforms. Ensuring people's participation, this is the third remedy. The land reforms, it may be added, are not just a matter of enacting laws or administration of these laws. These reforms involve radical changes in the long established patterns of tenurial relations as also of ownership and distribution of the most precious productive asset of the rural economy. To realize the objectives of land reforms peacefully, it is necessary that people interested in them are associated with their implementation. The non-governmental voluntary organizations, if brought into the picture, can do a lot in the smooth application of land reforms. They can see that the administration does its job in the proper way. They can also get the grievances of the farmers rectified by the government agencies. Their association and is very helpful in pursuing the court cases on behalf of the poor farmers. The beneficiaries of the land reform, namely the small farmers, being illiterate and resource poor, can do nothing on their own. If organized into a body, they can do a lot to ensure that the land reforms are put into practice as per the laws. Their position can be further strengthened if they are encouraged to form their own cooperatives. This will enable them also to pool their resources of labor and land to strengthen their position as also derive the gains of economies of scale. And above all, a strong political support is needed to ensure that the principles underlying the land reforms are rightly embodied into the legislative acts and that these laws are speedily put into practice. This requires that all the political parties commit themselves to this revolutionary change in an unambiguous language. This alone can ensure the right reformation of the agrarian system of the country. After having taken up land reforms as a whole, we now discuss each one of its three components, namely tenancy reforms, redistribution of land, and consolidation of holdings. First, we will look at tenancy reforms. The improvements in the tenurial system under which tenant takes land from the landowner have been along two lines. One, the zamindari system, which was the creation of the British rule, has been abolished. Two, efforts largely legislative in character have been made for the betterment of the tenant in large many areas of the country. Meaning and forms of tenancy reforms. To begin with, we take up the meaning of the tenancy system. We also describe the main forms in which the system is formed in the country. Tenant cultivation. The basic feature of the tenancy system is that the cultivator cultivates a land taken from an owner on payment of rent or by sharing the produce of land with the landlord. As such, the tenurial system of a country identifies the ownership of land and the relation of the owner with the cultivator. The two, that is the owner and the cultivator, may be separate entities. As, for example, in the zamindari system, or the two functions of owning and cultivation may vest in the same person as in the Roitwari system. In case the owner and the tiller are separate persons, cultivation is done in terms of conditions of tenancy. In such a system, the cultivator is a tenant who may be paying a rent or sharing the crop with the owner. This tenancy may be temporary or fixed permanently, subject to the fulfillment of certain conditions. The person identified as owner is also related to government in so far as he is responsible for making tax payments such as land revenue to the state. Thus, a tenurial system encompasses such things as the owner, the cultivator, and the government, interrelations among them, and the rights and obligations of each. As a result of historical factors, a number of tenurial systems emerged in the country. These can be broadly classified under three heads: the zamindari system, the Roitwari system, and the Mahalwari system. We briefly deal with each separately. First, we will start with zamindari system. The system prevailed over about 40% of the land under cultivation during the British rule. Since independence, it has ceased to exist in its old form. The British viewed the land tenure system only for the angle of fixing responsibility for the payment of land revenue to the government. They were indifferent to what happened to the tiller and to production. As such, even those persons who were not in reality owners were made so by the British government for the simple reason that they were arranging the collection of land revenue from agriculturists. Under this system, two distinct classes emerged, owners and cultivators. Thus, between the government and tillers, owners acted as intermediaries. Often the number of intermediaries was very large, caused by the sub-tenancy of land. The principal tenants sublet the land taken on lease from zamindars. The sub-tenants did likewise and leased the land to other tenants. In this way, the number of intermediaries between the government and the actual cultivator multiplied. According to the Simon Commission report, in some cases, there were as many as 50 intermediaries. The work of raising crops on such land was ordinarily done by tenants who took land from the owner or the zamindar. The rent was generally determined on the basis of share of the produce, which was normally 50% or more of the total production. Of this, a portion was paid by the zamindar to the government. The share of the government used to be around 10/11 of the rent, 10/11 of the rent, leaving 1/11 for the zamindar as payment for collection. The amount of land revenue payable to the government was fixed either permanently or temporarily. The former system of the fixation of land revenue was known as permanent settlement, and the latter was known as temporary settlement for a period of 20 to 40 years, after which the amount of land revenue payable could be revised. Permanent settlement prevailed in Bengal, Bihar, Orissa, and in some parts of Assam and Madras, now Chennai, temporary settlement was to be formed in Uttar Pradesh, Punjab, Rajasthan, and Madhya Pradesh. The second form of tenancy system is Roy Quarry system. The cultivator under this system deals directly with the government. He takes land from it and pays to it land revenue. No intermediary, therefore, stands between the tiller and the government as under the zamindari system. So long as he regularly pays land revenue, he continues to hold the land and cannot be evicted. He has even the right to sell the land. Since the ownership of land vests with the government, he has simply the right of occupancy. It is for this reason that he is known as an occupancy tenant. The payment made to the government is in the nature of rent and it is settled for a period of 20 to 30 years. The system is to be found largely in Maharashtra, Gujarat, Assam, Tamil Nadu and Madhya Pradesh. Cultivation under this system is done ordinarily by owners themselves, but sometimes the owner gives land to others on lease. In such cases, cultivation is done by tenants. Under this arrangement, tenants have no permanent rights in land, and for this reason, they are called tenant at will or non-occupancy tenants. These tenants work in terms of conditions laid down in the lease, and the conditions are generally dictated by owners. Now the third form of tenancy system is Mahalwari system. In this system, land is held under the joint ownership of the entire village community. The members of the community jointly and individually are responsible for the payment of land revenue to the government. Generally, the village community appoints a certain person for this purpose. The land revenue is normally fixed for 30 to 40 years and is subject to change after the expiry of the fixed period. The fixation of land revenue, its payment and other connected things are different in different places. This system is prevalent in Punjab, UP and in some places of Madhya Pradesh. The arrangements for cultivation vary from place to place. At some places, cultivation is undertaken by owners, as for example in Punjab, while at others it is done through tenants as in Uttar Pradesh. The rights in land or the division of the produce raised on land are based upon different considerations in different places. In some places it is done as per arrangements made by their forefathers. In others the basis is traditional principles or with reference to the number of plows, wells, etc. on the land. Harmful consequences. The tenurial system of India is very defective. Both from the angle of production and investment, it is highly disincentive-ridden system. For the actual tiller of the soil, the system is only a dispenser of injustice. We touch upon the various aspects of working of the system to realize how grave are its consequences. Low investment and no incentives. India's tenurial system is not at all conducive to making investment in agriculture. Under the zamindari system, the owner is least interested in making investment. His only objective is to get the maximum share of the produce for nothing. The tiller, being the most squeezed man, has neither the resources to make investment nor any incentive to do so. Far from increasing resources, he does not have incentives even to make a proper use of the available resources. He knows that the fruits of his effort, labor and investment will be shared by the zamindar. In the circumstances, he is not only not interested in making improvements on land, he is also prone to use the land to the point of exhausting it of its reproductive power. In other systems too, a similar situation prevails. For example, in case of the Roy Quarry system, many peasants are too small to make investment. A few of them lease out land on rent. This results in harmful effects similar to those under the zamindari system, perhaps in a more intensified form because of the complete insecurity associated with the tenancy at will. In the Mahalwari system also, more or less the same shortcomings arise in places where farming is done through tenants. Another evil having adverse repercussions on agricultural production is caused by the prevalence of absentee landlordism. In the last few years, many poor peasants, particularly in Roitwari areas, have sold or mortgaged their lands to non-residents. Though belonging to the village, such owners neither make any improvement in land nor supervise agricultural operations. In a large number of cases, the land remains uncultivated. The second harmful consequence is distributive injustice. The various tenurial systems inflict injustice on cultivators in three important ways. First, cultivators working as tenants do not get a fair share of their produce. They are heavily rack rented with no alternative work, and because of rapidly rising population and therefore increasing pressure on land, these cultivators submit to all sorts of conditions of tenancy, including a very small share of their produce. Secondly, with no certainty about the tenure, particularly in tenancy at will, they suffer throughout their lives from insecurity and always work under the threat of eviction from land. This forces them to work as serfs and at a subhuman level. Third, injustice arises from the widening disparities of wealth and income between tillers and owners. Many of the owners of small holdings have become landless and have joined the ranks of tenants or agricultural workers. On the other hand, rich owners have acquired more land, a rough indication of the yawning gulf between the haves and the have-nots can be had from the existing size distribution of operational holdings. The operational holdings no doubt include in some cases land leased from others besides owned land. Their distribution profile, however, does represent fairly correctly the inequalities of wealth, that is land, and income from it. As per the data, in 1990 and 91, a vast number constituting 59% of the holdings are marginal holdings, that is, with size of holdings below 1 hectare. The total area under them is only 14.9%. At the other end, there are 1.2% holdings which are large, with size of holdings at 10 or more hectares. The area under them is as much as 17.4%. Such vast inequalities of land holdings also cause large inequalities in income. Improving conditions of tenants. In view of the defective tenancy system, several measures were undertaken to reform it. These measures may be described under the following four heads. First one is abolition of the zamindari system, second fixation of rent, third security of tenant cultivators, and fourth one is right of ownership. First point, abolition of zamindari system. The first step towards the betterment of the conditions of the tenant cultivator was the abolition of the zamindari system and conferment of certain rights on the tiller of the soil. This program was implemented as early as by 1954. With this, the intermediaries between the cultivators and the government disappeared. Instead, the cultivators, numbering about 20 million, themselves came into direct contact with the government. Large money, around 6 million, were made owners of nearly 7 million acres of land they cultivated. Besides, a considerable area of cultivable wasteland and private forest land, which came into the possession of the government, was distributed among the landless agricultural labourers. Second condition, improving condition of tenants, is fixation of rent. Before 1951, as much as 50% or more, in some cases 70-80% of the produce used to be paid as rent. Besides, cultivators had to render certain free services to owners of land. In most of the places, rent used to be paid in kind and not in money. In the first plan, it was laid down as a guideline for the states that the rent should not exceed 20% or 25% of the produce of land. In the light of these guidelines, all the states have enacted laws for regulating the rent payable by cultivating tenants. But rates of rent have been fixed at different levels in different states.
The maximum rates of rent have been fixed at levels not exceeding those laid down in the guidelines in all the states, except in a few states where it has been in the range of 30 to 40% of the gross produce. The rates vary among states, as also different places even within the states. Depending upon whether land is wet or dry and the size of land owned, different rates of rent have been fixed. At some places, rents have been differentiated on the basis of differences in land revenue. The third point is security of tenant cultivators. The tenants have been provided with varying degree of security through the following two measures. One concerns the ejectment of tenant from the land he cultivates. For this, it is provided that the tenant can be deprived of the land only under certain conditions. These are, if he does not pay rent, does anything that damages land, sublets land, or uses land for purposes other than cultivation. It has also been provided that in case a tenant is ejected, such land should be given to some other cultivator or tenants. Second measure concerns the restrictions placed on the landowners in case they want to resume the land for self-cultivation. Some states have put a maximum limit on the land that can be resumed by the landlord. In some states, resumption is permitted only if some land is left with the tenant. There are some states where the owners have not been given the right to resume land for self-cultivation. And the fourth point is right of ownership. Towards the aim of making the cultivator owner of land, the states have taken certain steps. In more than a dozen states, laws have been enacted to confer ownership rights to the cultivating tenants. Among them are the following states: Maharashtra, Gujarat, Kerala, Karnataka, Assam, Himachal Pradesh, Jammu and Kashmir, Rajasthan, Madhya Pradesh, and Orissa. In a few other states, the tenants have been given the optional right to purchase the land held under their cultivation on payment to the landlord. As a result of these measures, the system of tenancy has almost disappeared in states like Gujarat, Maharashtra, Kerala, Himachal Pradesh, and Jammu and Kashmir. Now we will have a critical assessment. The tenancy reforms have no doubt improved the conditions of the tenants, but these have also been beset with some serious shortcomings. The first one is beneficial aspects. As for the program of the tenancy reforms, it has largely been in the right direction. The abolition of the zamindari system has put an end to the parasite class of intermediaries. Quite a number of cultivators have benefited from this measure, with ownership rights conferred on them. Many landless agricultural laborers too have been given land to cultivate. In areas where tenancy prevails, right type of measures have been undertaken to reform the system. Such measures as the fixation of rent, restrictions on the ejectment of tenants from the land, and on the resumption of land by the owners for self-cultivation, as also the facilities offered to the tenants to become owners of the land they cultivate, indicate that the problem of tenancy has been approached from several desirable angles. Quite a success has also been recorded in these spheres. Several shortcomings. Despite these gains, the policy of tenancy reforms suffers from serious failings. Take the zamindari system. In the various laws abolishing it, provision was made only for the collection of land revenue from the cultivators rather than from the intermediaries. As a result, many intermediaries, largely non-cultivators, themselves became owners of land. They started giving land to tenants on rent, and they themselves became absentee landlords. What it amounted to was that while these intermediaries ceased to collect land revenue for the government, they acquired the legal right to collect rent for themselves. As Daniel and Thorner, writing about Uttar Pradesh, said, majority of intermediaries became agriculturists with special rights. A worse form of tenancy developed, namely tenancy at will. By and large, this type of tenancy is not laid down in any document. It is oral. In this sense, the absentee landlord has become more powerful than even before. Another evil resulting from this has been the large-scale ejection of cultivators from lands who have been farming them since long in the past. This they did under the cover of resumption of cultivation by self-provided in the laws. No doubt, certain restrictions on the resumption of land for self-cultivation did exist in the laws of same state in some states. Despite these provisions, there was large-scale evasion of the law. The peasants, for fear of ejection and because of party and lack of organization, did not approach courts or sought redress at the political level.